The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This is part two, the second and final of a series of shiurim entitled The Sexual Revolution, a Torah Viewpoint. I'd like to take the first few minutes just to very concisely recap some of the principles which we learned about last week. Last week we spoke firstly of what constitutes marriage by the Bnei Noach, by the nations of the world, and for the Bnei Yisrael, Jewish people, before the giving of the Torah, in which we learn that then marriage was constituted by what would be referred to now as common law marriage. That if a man and a woman decided that they wanted to marry, they wanted to be man and wife, so then they would set each other aside for themselves, and they would have a physical relationship, a sexual relationship, with the understanding that this would make them into man and wife, and they would be married. When one of the two parties would decide that they want to leave the marriage, then the marriage was dissolved. And this still holds true for the Bnei Noach, for the peoples of the world today, as far as the Torah law is considered, as far as the Torah law is concerned. Therefore, a woman who is a partner to such a marriage is considered a married woman, and no one else is allowed to take her, if he does, by punishment of death, according to the law of the Torah. After, and this is even after the giving of the Torah and Sinai, as far as the other nations are concerned. But in regards to Klal Yisrael, then things were changed. Firstly, they were commanded that they can constitute marriage only through likuchim, some act of possession, which would show that they are taking this woman to be their wife. It must be in accordance to the laws of the Torah, and it must be in the presence of two qualified Jewish witnesses. Then they were married, regardless if the marriage was consummated or it wasn't consummated. And then they were permitted to live together as man and wife. This could only be dissolved, this marriage, only through a divorce which was sanctioned by the Torah, which was a document that must be given from the man to the woman. And as we mentioned, it had 10 basic principles in accordance to the Torah. So we see that the structure of marriage was a much firmer, stronger structure, and this was because the Torah gave to Klal Yisrael a Kedusha Yisera, an extra degree of sanctity by which they must sanctify their marriages with. In addition to that, then we found Kiddusha Sachupa, that the Chachomim decreed that a man who's married to a woman is not allowed, though, to physically live with her until he has brought her into his home. If she's still in her father's home, then they are not permitted to have any sexual relations. And this was called chuppah. And when he brought her to the chuppah, so there were a series of brochas which were made, which were known as the Vov brochas, or the Zayin brochas, the Sheva brochas. And this is what the Gemara tells us, kala b'le brocha asura lekenido, that a kala, a person's wife, is still forbidden to him until he has brought her to the chuppah and he has pronounced the brochas of the sanctification of marriage. So we see even a further dimension of Kiddushas HaZivug, of sanctity in the marriage. And then we learned even a third dimension. That is that the sages always refer to marriage as Kiddushin. The Gemara tells us in the beginning of Masechta Kiddushin that this is Lishne Drabonim. This was the way the sages referred to it, even though it was not called this in the Torah. And why? This is to teach us that when a woman becomes married to a man, a Jewish woman to a Jewish man, in accordance to the laws of the Torah, there is the essence of sanctity. There is the degree of sanctity that she becomes sanctified to him. And through this, she rises above the approach of all other people. Whereas she is sanctified to him and him alone. There is this bond of sanctity. And that's why it was called all the time Kiddushin. Then we went on to another principle. And that is that the zivug, the living together of man and wife, this we find in the Torah, is referred to as achilas lechem, the eating of bread. For example, Moshe, when he saw the daughters of Yisro in Midian, so the father told them, why did you forsake him? Kiren lei v'yechaloch. Bring him here and he will eat bread with us. The Chazal say that he had in mind, perhaps he will marry one of you. And we explain this because we have a principle from the sages, a very deep principle that we elaborated on last week, that an act, any type of act, is always in relationship to the one who executes the act. If you have two people or three people or many people executing an act, does not mean that this act is the same, even though superficially it might look the same. It is always in ratio, in proportion to the one who's doing it, the one who's executing it. Because an act is merely the expression of the person's abilities and talents. So everyone interjects different abilities and different talents in his physical acts or his mental acts. Therefore the Rambam tells us that we shouldn't make the mistake to think that when an animal eats and a man eats, this is the same act. They're worlds apart. A man has tzeichel, he has wisdom, intellect, he has emotion, and he has a physical body. And he can interject all of these things into his acts. Secondly, an important principle is that some acts of man are entrenched in the intellect, some in emotions, and some in the body. For example, thinking, reading, intellectual pursuits, that has to do with the mind. Jealousy, anger, this has to do with the emotions. Eating, this is a sleeping, this is an act basically entrenched in the physical part of man. An animal that basically is physical, therefore he also can execute physical acts that we find by man. He has a degree of a nefesh, a degree of a spark of life in him, and therefore we find certain acts of the nefesh also by animals. This jealousy, this hatred. But acts of this, of the wisdom, of the intellect, this we do not find by animal species. Now the sages teach us that when a man executes an act, all acts, he must elevate. Where the total man is in the act, not only physically but also emotionally. His heart should be in it, his mind should be in it, his spirit and soul should be in it. In this way it's considered an act of man, if he fulfills an act merely with his physical elements, then it's not necessarily an act of man, because an animal also can do that. This is how he is distinguished, and his acts are distinguished from that of other species. And this is how the acts of great men are distinguished from acts of lesser men. Therefore, the sages teach us that when a man eats, even though basically that's entrenched in physical man, he can serve the Almighty with this, like a korban, like a sacrifice. His table is an altar. Because if he eats for the sake of bringing health and vigor to himself, so he will be able to function properly, so he'll be able to serve Hashem, so he'll be able to do mitzvahs of Hashem, then all of his powers go into this act, and this act becomes a very great service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is why the sages enacted Netilas Yadayim, the washing of the hands before one eats bread, before one eats a meal. They learned it from the Pasuk, Vizkadashtem. You shall sanctify yourself. But since eating is entrenched basically in the physical side of man, in order that he should elevate it, and it should become man in his totality, therefore, they enacted Netilas Yadayim. If man were to eat only because of physical reasons, only because of physical desires, like the Rambam writes, that he'll eat only what tastes good to the palate, then kibahema, then he's like an animal, because an animal also can do that. That's not man. And so is it with the act of the zivug, with the sexual act, our sages tell us. That's something also which basically is entrenched in the physical side of man. Therefore you find this among species that are basically are only physical. But if man in his totality performs this, then he can come to the greatest levels of man, and to the greatest levels of serving Hashem. We brought where this act in the Torah many times is referred to with Loshon Yodiah, the Yoda, Odom is Chava, which is the highest form of wisdom, which means that man can reach spiritual perfection if this act is performed properly. To give a few examples, it states that when this act is performed with perfection, then the Shekhinah Shruya B'Nehem, Kodesh Baruch Hu dwells with man and wife. He places one letter of his name in man and one letter of his name in woman. Ish v'isha, yud hey. And he can perform the mitzvah of Pruavu to be fruitful and multiply, which the Gemara calls not only a mitzvah, but mitzvah rabba, a very great mitzvah. And he becomes a shutif im HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he becomes an actual partner to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the creation. And he brings tremendous sanctity to himself, and to his wife, and to his children through this. And he reaches this level of yediyah, of knowing this is man in his totality. And this is why the Rambam says that those doctors or scientists or great thinkers of the time, of his time, that wanted to say that this act was merely a biological function, he said, Herpo hilonu, this is a disgrace to man. Because it's a biological function, perhaps, by species that cannot rise above the level of the physical element. But man that is made up of the physical element and the emotional element, the nefesh, and the seichel, and the intellectual element, and the spiritual element, and he's called upon to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in totality, he says, Cherpa hilonu, this is a disgrace to man to make such a statement. On the other hand, this act, therefore, is referred to, this is one of the reasons why it's referred to as achilas lechem, the eating of bread. If it's performed merely because of physical reasons, of physical drives, and for physical satisfaction, then there's a tremendous reduction, a tremendous yurido, to the point where there's not that much distinction now between that act and the act of an animal. And it's for this reason that Klal Yisrael, that were given a added dimension of Kedusha, were given so many added dimensions how to be Mekadesh, how to sanctify their family life, their marriage. Because only under the structure of Kedusha can it be elevated to this total level. And therefore the Gemara tells us something very profound. It says, "Kol ha'echol lechem b'lei netilas shadayim ki ilu bo al ish hazeina." That anyone who eats a meal without first sanctifying his hands is as if he is taking a prostitute. And the Maral Miprag explains this. Because there the eating is becoming something, is reduced to purely a physical act. So therefore it's very similar to when a person takes a prostitute, an isha without kedusha, that it's reduced totally to a physical act. These are the basic principles which we spoke about last week. Now, Yitzhak Hashem, this evening, as much as time will permit, I can see that the original agenda, itinerary, was too ambitious. I'm sure we won't cover all of it, but let's try to cover whatever we can. Let's go into some particular areas now of the Torah viewpoint, both legally and morally, in regards to this broad and very fascinating subject, and see just how it correlates with the revolution that is going on in our days. We find today what has become somewhat of the vogue amongst many people. To where a man and a woman would live together on a permanent basis, but without any structure of marriage. And if they're Jewish, so then without Kupa V'Kedushin. Now we are assuming that the woman is a single woman, and assuming that she is also Tahora, that she is not in the state of Nida, of a woman of menstruation, which is forbidden to us by the Torah. Assuming this is what the Gemara refers to as a pilegish. It has to do with a bias penuya, living together with a single woman without chupa v'kedushin. The Gemara refers to this, calls this a pilegish. And the actual translation of a pilegish would be a concubine. There is a discussion in the Gemara, basically in the Rishonim, in the early authorities, if one is permitted to have such a woman or not. The Rambam's opinion in Perek Dalet of Malachim, Hilchos Malachim, is one is not permitted. You is not permitted. There's only one exception, a melech, a king in Israel. States that the king always had wives and he had pilakshim. But he holds otherwise he's not. And if one does take such a woman who set aside for him, then he is transgressing the mitzvah of kiddushin. because the Torah said that first he must sanctify her with the proper process of Kiddushin. The Ravid and the Rosh, they hold that such a woman is permitted to take. There could be such a living structure, provided, as we mentioned, that she's a single woman, and provided that she keeps the laws of Nido, the laws of menstruation that the Torah has commanded us. So actually, what we find quite common today, there is a precedent for in Torah law. But there's a few things we should bear in mind. Firstly, according to all opinions, this woman is not known as a wife. She is not called an Isha, but rather she is called a Pilegish. A Pilegish is a second class citizen. That's a wife that does not have a status of a wife, but rather of a concubine. Secondly, she lacks all of the Kedusha, the sanctity, that the Torah gave us on how to perform marriages, and she lacks the Kedusha of the Chuppah and of the Kala B'lei Brocha, that the Torah said first we must sanctify a Kala with the Brochas and with the Chuppah. This she lacks. So therefore, naturally, any physical relationship with such a woman will also be reduced in this area. Thirdly, the Ravid brings in Hilchos Ishus, what does the word Pilegish mean? It's not a common word. So the Ravid brings in Perek Aleph, Hilchos Ishus, says the word Pilegish comes from Murkevis Pishegel Eimedes Leprokim Lemishgol Leshamis Sabayis Upomim Lemishgol. It's a woman that was used only for two purposes: to take care of the domestic needs of the house and for sexual relations. And that's what where the word Pilegish comes from. Further, such a marriage structure is actually reducing the marriage structure of Israel to exactly what the marriage structure of the nations of the world is, as we spoke about last week. Because when the nations of the world get married, this is the way the Torah provided, that they set aside a woman for themselves and they live together as man and wife. And this is the way also that marriages were made by Bnei Yisrael before the giving of the Torah. So this revolutionary idea is reducing the status of a wife to the status of a concubine, to taking the Kedusha of a Bas Yisrael, of a daughter of Israel that was given the Kedusha of a Malka, of a queen, and reducing her to what was the structure before the giving of the Torah, or what is the common practice of all of the nations of the world, and reducing them merely for an instrument to be used. In Eben Ezer, in the beginning of Hilchos Ishus, in Simon Chov Vov, the Rama brings that the Bnei Mishpachta, the relatives of the husband, can make a mechor, they have the right to object and to force him to rid himself of this concubine because of pekah mishpocha, because this brings a blemish to the family in its entirety. So we see a further reduction in the status. And then one final point. Rashi in Parshas Chayesora, Rashi learns that even if you marry a woman with a proper kiddushin, with a proper marriage, but you do not give her a ksuba, you do not give her the ksuba, which means the responsibilities, you do not undertake the responsibilities towards a wife that you're obligated to. Now here we're either referring to the responsibilities that the Torah said one must take, or that the rabbis said one must take, but it means some responsibilities to her, then this also has the status of a pilegish, of a concubine. So Rashi learns even further, that even a woman with a proper marriage, with a proper chuppah kedushin, but if you're not giving to her the if you're not undertaking the responsibilities, that you, some type of responsibilities, marriage responsibilities, then she also has the status of a pelegish, of a concubine. So one can ask here, that one of the things that we see going on in this revolution today are these types of marriages. And many times one of the basic motives for this is because neither partner wants responsibility. They don't want to get involved in a formal marriage because that requires responsibilities. They want a free marriage where they will not be responsible. And some of the liberated or the liberals feel that they have achieved something with this. In the view of the Torah, they have retarded by centuries, because this is exactly the status that was for Klal Yisrael many thousands of years ago before the giving of the Torah. And this is not considered the status of a wife, but this is rather considered the status of a concubine. Now what woman would want to make herself into something like that? And where she becomes merely an instrument, this is considered a blemish in the family. Responsibilities toward each other, and a formal structure towards each other, this is what gives the marriage status in Kedusha. So there we would have a viewpoint in regards to such a marriage. We'll go to a second category. Living together with a single woman, but not in a permanent nature, only in an incidental manner. This is what the Gemara refers to as bias penuya, ba'akroi. Again, now we are assuming that the woman is single. She's someone who the man is permitted to marry by Jewish law. And also, she is Tahora. This category, this second category, is a step down from Pilegish, from concubine. Because at least by concubine, we do find there some structure in the Torah of that type of living. As we mentioned, according to some authorities, it would be permissible. According to Rambam, it's not permissible, but to a king it was permissible. He had wives and he had concubines. But this is worse. This we do not find any type of issues. We do not find any structure here whatsoever. According to the Rambam, again, he would transgress the positive commandment of first sanctifying a woman before living together with her physically. And naturally, this type of act would lack all kedusha, all sanctity, which we find in the structure of kedushin, and which we find in the structure of chuppah. And this is always referred to by the Gemara, by our sages, as biaznus, which means that this is an act of promiscuity. Now, very interesting Gemara. The Gemara brings in Masechet Avodah Zarah Daf Lamed Vav Lamed Beis the Gemara says Znus de Pnuya, in regards to this type of act, Bez Din Shel Shem Gozru, the Bez Din of Shem prohibited it. Who was Shem? Shem was a son of Noach that lived many, many years. He lived during the time of, all the way to the time of Avraham Avinu. He was a very righteous person, and it was from him that Abraham was a descendant. And his Beis Din decreed on the nations of the world. This was before Abraham, so there was no concept of a Jew, of Israel. His Beis Din decreed that one must not partake in such an act of promiscuity, even with a single girl. Even though the Torah did not forbid this to the nations of the world, but he decreed this with his Beis Din. Why? So the commentaries tell us, because Geder Godru Midora Mabel, after the flood came and wiped out all of mankind, and Shem was one of the sons of Noach that was on the Teva, that was on the boat with Noach, so the nations of the world accepted upon themselves harchokas, extra laws, in order to maintain a good moral standard. And one of these laws was bias penuya, an act of promiscuity with a single girl. And they gave to this prohibition a tremendous punishment. It was punishable by death. Where do we see this? So this the Gemara brings in the case of Yehuda and Tamar. If you recall that in Parshas Vayeshev, when Yehuda went and he didn't know Tamar was his daughter-in-law, that he had a physical relationship with her, and later on it was reported to him, he was a judge, and it was reported to him that she is pregnant with children, and she was a single woman. So in Parshas Vayeshev, Yehuda said, Haitziu v'sisoreif, take her out and let her be burned. Now, on what basis was he burning her? She was a single woman. The nations of the world were only prohibited with adultery or certain types of incest. So the Gemara says, because Beis Din shel Shem gozru olov, this was a prohibition from the Beis Din of Shem, that the nations of the world should not partake in such promiscuity, and if they do, it is punishable by death. Why were they so severe with this? The reason is obvious. Because the flood was the greatest devastation that ever hit the world. There was never such a disaster that came upon mankind in its totality. And the Torah tells us what was the reason of the flood. In Parshas Noach, in Posuk Yud Aleph, Bereshis Vav, Vatishocheis Ha'oretz Lifnei Elokim Vatimoleh Ha'oretz Chomos. The world brought itself to ruination Vayar ki masoras binenish choso. Kodesh Baruch Hu saw that the world was ruining itself. Ki hishchis kol bosoras darki ala oretz. So Rashi tells us what kind of ruination was it bringing itself to. It brought itself to a moral ruination because of sexual promiscuity. Because of all types of promiscuity and even deviations from the norm, it brought itself to such a state that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that he must wipe off mankind from the face of the earth, except Noah's family. And shame that lived all through this. So under his leadership, all of the nations of the world came together. The Godul al Atzmon, and they made a wall against Pritzus, against promiscuity, which was punishable by death. We find an interesting medrash that was in last week's Sedra. Medrash tells us in Vayetze Simen Ein Eshut Beis, that when Yaakov went to look for a wife, see, he came to the well, and when he saw Rochel, so the Torah tells us he went over and he kissed her, he embraced her and he kissed her. Then Vayisas Kele Vayef, he lifted up his voice and he wept. So the Medrash asks, why did he weep? One reason why he wept is because he foresaw that he wouldn't be buried with her together in the Moras Machpelah, the cave of Machpelah. This we went into last week. But the Medrash tells us another reason why he wept. Because when he kissed her, all of the other shepherds, when they saw that he kissed her, Yaakov saw that they were whispering to each other. They were murmuring. They said, what is this stranger coming to teach us? What is he coming to revolutionize here? Dvar erva, promiscuity. Shemisho shaloko eilam bedor amabul omdu kola umeis vegodratz mina erva. Because from the time that the world was destroyed with the flood, all of the nations came together. And they undertook upon themselves to maintain a high moral standard. From here we see that even the people of the east, because this was Yaakov traveled back to the east to where Abraham used to live in Choron and in Aram Naraim. This was in the area of Persia or of Iran or Iraq, it was Babel. And we see, the Medrash says, we see from here that at that time the people of the east maintained a high moral standard. So when Yaakov saw that this is what they were saying, he wept. Because Cholila, he should erode their standards. So what about Yaakov? What about his own standard? So the Medrash tells us that he kissed her as a relative. She was a relative of his. This was not a kiss of promiscuity, this was a kiss of a relative. And she's a relative that he was permitted to marry. And she was Tahora. She was Tahora, she was pure, she was not in a state of menstruation. So therefore, this is why he kissed her. But they didn't understand this, they didn't know that. So therefore Yaakov wept, because he thought he's influencing others to do wrong. When Bilaam was hired to curse Klal Yisrael, and he went and he tried, he attempted, and he wasn't successful, so then he said, I'll give you another Eitzah. He said, the God of these people hates Zima. They hate immorality, he hates. He told the king of Midian, go send your daughters into Israel. Let them entice the Israelites, let them entice them into acts of immorality, and through this also to idolatry. And then their God will become very angry at them, and he will destroy them. And this is what Balaam did. Now the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu became very fierce, not only against Klal Yisrael, but against Balaam and against Midian. And where he commanded that they should go to war in the Kol Nikmas and take revenge for this, and they should destroy, to kill all of the men of Midian and all of the women of Midian for being chaita umachti, for misleading a nation. And the Gemara tells us, Balaam potsu gedeshul elam. Balaam was the one who came and he broke down the wall that the nations had built up after the flood. He came and he broke down the wall that they had built up. This is in regards to the nations of the world. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us another halacha. In Sanhedrin, Daf Chof Aleph Amud Beis, Chof Aleph Amud Aleph and Chof Aleph Amud Beis, the Gemara brings the episode of Tamar and Amnon. This is from Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Gimel. Amnon was a son of David HaMelech, and Tamar was a daughter, but they were not brothers and sisters. Tamar actually was a Georis, she was a convert. So actually, Amnon would have been permitted to marry Tamar. The Tanakh tells us a whole story where he had a great desire and lust for Tamar. So he made off, he was sick, in order that he could be secluded together with Tamar, and Tamar would come and take care of him, and they would be in seclusion together. And then when they were in seclusion, he violated her. At this time, Tamar said, "Livneis malachim kach, livneis hedjotis alachas kam v'kam." If this can happen to the daughter of the king, so how much more so this could happen to the other daughters of Israel? Im litznuis kach leprutzeis alachas kam v'kam. If this can happen to the modest girls, so to those who are immodest, how much more so it could happen? And she wept. She cried for many, many days. Omer of Yehuda Marabe, Eisishor, Gozru, Alayichud, Valapniud. At that time, from that episode, the Bezdin of David HaMelech, the Bezdin of King David, made a decree that one is not allowed to be in seclusion even with a single girl. The Torah said that we're not allowed to be in seclusion with a woman that we're not allowed to marry. For example, another man's wife, or some relative that we're not allowed to marry. So at that time, the Bezdin of David HaMelech of King David decreed Yichud Penuya, that we are not allowed to be in seclusion even with a single girl. Because if this is what it will bring to by the daughters of the kings, so what will it bring to the other daughters? If this is what will bring to the modest daughters, what will it bring to the immodest daughters? So there we have a little background in regards to the promiscuity with a single woman who actually is tahora, she's pure, and one that one is allowed to marry, so therefore it's not considered by Arais, it's not considered amongst the forbidden women. Now, we learn from here. Firstly, we learn that even the nations of the world foresaw what this could bring to, and they undertook a very great prohibition upon themselves with a very great punishment. Secondly, at the time of David HaMelech, his Beis Din decreed another geder, harchokos, that even in seclusion one must not be in such a situation, because they realized that this area requires a strong structure, safeguards, in order to maintain a moral standard. Now, the nations were not foolish. Don't think they were so foolish. They saw a devastation of the world. They saw the great flood. And they knew what brought it, what brought to it. And the same thing with the court of King David. Today, in the revolution that we live in, by the nations of the world, is the wall is long forgotten. This Bilam took care of. But unfortunately, even in the Jewish ranks, people do not seem cognizant of this. Either the youth or the parents. The liberals feel that mixed dormitories is something which is progress. Yeah, it's progress going back to before the flood. And campuses which breed this, these are the academic centers of the world, this is progress, and every parent stands in line to make sure that his son or daughter will have a place there through the promiscuity of a single woman. We'll go to a third category. There's another category of the Torah which is referred to as Kedesha. Let us see what we can learn from that. In Parshas Kisetze, Pasuk Chav Gimel Yud Ches, Vayikra Chav Gimel Yud Ches, Dvorim Chav Gimel Yud Ches, Losia Kedeshim Ibnaish Israel. You shall not allow the existence of a Kedesha to be amongst the daughters of Israel. Then it states also another posuk. Loisechala es bitcho lahazneso. You shall not desecrate your daughter to give her away for acts of promiscuity. What is a Kedesha? A Kedesha is what we would translate as a harlot, as a prostitute. The Rambam brings in Perek Aleph of Ishu Saloch Dalet. Kedem Matan Terah Hoya Adam Pegea Isha Bishuk. Before the giving of the Torah, a person could meet a woman in the marketplace, Imrotzo Huvihi, if they both had a common interest, Nesin Los Chora, he would give her a fee, Ubaya Leiso, he would have sexual intercourse with her, all Imaderech Vahelech, and then he would leave and go away. Bezuhi Anikreis Kedesha. This is what the Torah referred to as Kedesha. Mishanitna HaTorah Nasra HaKedesha. But when Torah was given to Klal Yisrael, so for Yisrael, the Kedesha became prohibited. Shnemar, as it states, Lo Siya Kedesha Mimenesh Yisrael, that you shall not allow a Kedesha, a prostitution,
to exist in Klal Yisrael. There is a very profound Rambam which defines for us the distinction between Kedesha and Bias Penuya. See, what would be the difference between merely having a physical relationship with another single woman or an act of prostitution? But the Gemara generally many times refers to the act with a single woman as pitui, pituya, befuta, which is in English would mean seduction. What is the legal difference? And there's different halachos. It has many legal ramifications. Now, what is the difference between seduction or prostitution? A prostitution, kedesha, is a match further down. Because as Aleisa said, it's a negative commandment. We mentioned before that seduction with a single woman, so that would only be that the person was transgressing, that he did not marry her properly. The mitzvah is the positive commandment of marriage, but to marry first. But a kedesha, prostitution, this involves a negative commandment of leishi a kedesha b'bnei Yisrael. Aleisa said. But how do we legally define the difference? The Rambam in Perek Beis of Nara Besula, at the end of the Perek Halacha Yud Zayin, writes as follows. This that the Torah forbade prostitution, this is when a woman gives herself away, or a father gives his daughter away for these acts, for financial gain. And then he says, or bechinam, even if it's not for financial gain, even free of charge. Sheyesh leilo odem limchul memeinai lechol mi sheyirtzeh, because a person has a right to forfeit his money. So therefore, if a father, in regards to his daughter, or a woman gives herself away, sells herself for financial gain, or even if they give themselves away for no gain at all, for no fee, because a person has a right to waive what's his, to waive any fee. He said, that's prostitution. He says, if that's prostitution, so what's the difference then between prostitution and mafata, seduction? He says, seduction is something that happens because of particular circumstances. And it happens only in distant times. That means that if a woman is seduced and she becomes overwhelmed by her desires, this is seduction. And therefore it has all the legal ramifications of pitui of seduction. But if a woman is a chino atzma lekach, she's not overwhelmed by her desires, but she gives herself away, and she gives herself away to many people, then he says this is bechlal kedesha. This is prostitution, and it comes under the category of kedesha of the negative commandment. Pitui, seduction, is where basically it was not willfully. She wasn't forced, but she was seduced. Kedesha, prostitution, he says, is where it's totally willfully. She gives herself away willfully, with sound mind. If she charges for it, good. If she doesn't charge for it, then she's waiving her fee. But it's all prostitution. This is what the Rambam writes. And he brings many legal ramifications that it'll have. Now, from here we can learn quite a bit. Especially in regards to our types. Alright, everyone knows that someone who sells themselves, that's prostitution. And nobody, no decent person would want to be categorized as a prostitute. So therefore you don't find decent people selling themselves. But we should also be aware that just like selling oneself is prostitution, if you sell anything that brings to promiscuity, is also categorized as selling promiscuity, as an area of prostitution. In other words, selling sex is what the Torah categorizes as kedusha. Now let's go into this a little more, because in the Alma de Shikra, in the world of lies that we live in, it's very important to define things very clearly. Otherwise the wool is always pulled over our eyes. Hollywood, which is a very decent industry, sells sex. Broadway, which is a very decent industry, sells sex. Paris sells sex. Magazines. TV. Videos. This is all one big industry. They're in it for making money. Their product is sex. Books, magazines, not all books, not all magazines, but any books or magazines or videos or plays that attract the customers and attract their money for this product, they're all in the business of selling sex. This would all be classified in the general area of kedusha in regards to the Torah. The Torah considers this all as prostitution, because they are taking women and they're selling them. They're selling them for money, and the suckers are buying. And it's one of the biggest industries in the world. It probably can vie very well with the drug industry. I once recall reading an article in the Jerusalem Post, in their column in which they review the plays, that one liberal author wrote. He was blasting the censorship of Israel, which is really not that tough, by saying, can't they understand that Israel today is mature enough to have nude plays? We have reached that level of maturity. In other words, this prostitution has been brought into Eretz HaKadosh, to Eretz Israel. If anyone tries to stop it, if government tries to stop it, police try to stop it, vice courts try to stop it, immediately the barrage from all of the liberated and the liberals and the academics. What's wrong with it? Meanwhile, it's the sex industry. All right, that's for money. And unfortunately, there are many, many people, many, many decent people, so-called decent people, that are heavily involved. Now, what about not for money? In accordance to the present revolution, it's become very acceptable amongst many circles for a woman to have sexual relations with all of her boyfriends. It's feeling that this is very proper today. This is very proper. This is the proper thing to do. Now, she would not want to classify herself as a prostitute. But according to the Rambam's explanation, the Torah is classifying her as a prostitute. Because this is not something that is happening because against her will, where she is overcome in an isolated situation by a tremendous desire that she cannot fight off, of which case he says that's what seduction is. But when a woman offers herself, be it for money, be it as a favor, he says that's kedusha. That's what the Torah considers prostitution. And here, in the liberated circles today, it's accepted that it's proper for a woman to offer herself. You have young girls. And when we speak of young girls, the hard facts are very, very young. 12 years old, 13 years old, 14 years old. This is all documented today. Who are offering themselves to their boyfriends, not because they're overcome by a tremendous desire. When interviewed by the sociologists, so many times the answer comes because they want to feel like a real woman. They have been brainwashed, misled. They have been destroyed. That a person will not be a real woman unless she's had a relationship with a boyfriend. So therefore they offer themselves. And this is going on not only in America and Europe, but in South Africa, in the schools, the government schools. As far as the Torah is concerned, this is kedusha. This is what is known as prostitution. Let's go to a fourth category. Incidentally, the Rambam writes, in regards to kedusha, prostitution, this is considered very degenerate. It brings the world into great depths of immorality and degeneration, because besides the fact that it completely erodes the moral standard of a person, but it brings nidezima, he writes, it brings when nobody knows who the children belong to. If people are constantly giving themselves away, so no one knows who the children belong to. And he says it comes out that a person can marry his own a person can marry his own daughter or his own sister from all of the confusion that can come from this. Let's go now to a fourth category. This category is Eshesish. This is a more severe category, very severe category in the Torah. Eshesish, adultery, a married woman. The Torah tells us in Parshas Achrei Meis Vayikra Yudches Chof, well, Eshes Amischa Leisitein Choptecho Lezora Letomavo. A person should not give his seed to a wife of another man. And then the Torah tells us in Achrei Meis, in Kedeshim, it brings the same prohibition, and where it's punishable by death. Now, when we get to adultery, we're getting to what is known as very, very severe categories. This is what is known as the arayis. It's punishable by the Bezdin with a death penalty. Any offsprings that come from such a union are what is known as mamzerim. Mamzerim means that the children are never considered full class citizens of Klal Yisrael and never allowed to intermarry to a full class citizen of Israel. And if someone would properly marry one of these women, the marriage would not be valid. Now, this category does not only include a married woman, it includes also close relatives, which would be translated as incest. We don't have time to go into the category of incest. Let's just speak a few words in regards to adultery. Having a relationship with another man's wife, we find, is not only from the most severe categories of immorality, but also relates to Bein Odom L'Chaveri. Not only an Avera between man and God, but also between man and his fellow man. First of all, it borders on theft. The Gemara brings in cases. Now, incidentally, this is a category that the Bnei Noach, the children of Noach, also are commanded in. As it states, V'dovak b'ishtoi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Odom, the first man, V'dovak b'ishtoi, you shall cleave to your wife. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Zamaches says, B'ishtoi v'lei eshes chavere, your wife you shall cleave to, but not to another man's wife. So this halacha encompasses the entire world. It borders on theft, because you are taking away from a man something that's his. You are intruding into another man's property. You are coming between man and his wife. And it's for this reason that the Torah tells us in Parshas Noso, in Bamidbor Perekei, Posuk Yud Beis, Daber al bnei Yisrael v'amat aleihem. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, Ish ish ki siste ishto yomol avay mol. That if a man's wife is unfaithful to him, and she becomes what is known as the sotah, the unfaithful wife, umol avay mol. The Chazal ask, why does it say ish ish? It says twice, a man whose wife is unfaithful to him. So Rashi brings, from here we see that she is rebelling. She and the adulterer are rebelling against two people. They're rebelling against their husband, and they're rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he said that a woman or a man should not commit adultery. And against her husband, because she is disloyal to her husband. That's the simple meaning. There's a deeper meaning that the sages tell us, Shleisha Shutfin Ba'odam. There are three partners in producing a child. Not only the father and mother, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's also a partner. And he dwells together with man and wife. And if someone comes between man and wife, if there is the disloyalty, so not only are they breaking the bond between man and wife, but they're breaking the bond of HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, because he's the third partner in the marriage. Therefore, ish ish, ish melchoma, he also takes revenge. Ish, the man of war, he takes revenge. And that's what the Torah tells us in Posuk Tezvov, that when she brings her sacrifices, it's called Minchas Kenois. It's called Minchas Kenaos. It's a meal offering of jealousy. Now it states two jealousies. Both her husband is jealous, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu also is jealous. And the Gemara brings, we learn that in regards to this type of immorality, there's a different law than all other types, that this destroys the marriage legally. If a woman willfully commits adultery, she is never allowed to return to her husband. She becomes forbidden forever to the husband, and she becomes also forbidden forever to the adulterer. This is the only place where we find such a law. What do we see from there? We see that a marriage cannot tolerate a disloyalty. This type of disloyalty, a marriage cannot tolerate. If there is this type of disloyalty, then the entire marriage is eroded completely. So therefore, this act is not only affecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's affecting another man. It brings Churban HaBayis, it brings destruction to his wife, destruction to his house, because the wife is considered the Akeres HaBayis, the mainstay of the house, and total destruction to his children. Another important factor is the Gemara in Seita tells us on Yud Omer Aleph Omer Rabbi Yechanan said, call him a zana. If a husband is immoral, ishtim is anenas olav, then his wife becomes immoral. Gemara brings a posuk. The Gemara says that's what people say, that they're of the same type. Now here also is a very important point. If a wife is disloyal to a husband, the Gemara says many times, perhaps more times than not, it's caused by the disloyalty of the husband. If the husband involves himself in acts of promiscuity, then the wife will. In other words, he can drive her to such a thing. If he wants loyalty in his house, then he also has to maintain the same standard for himself. Now this sanctity between man and his wife, where there should be this total loyalty, has very deep meanings for Klal Yisrael. First of all, the Gemara tells us in Seita and Yud Amud Beis and in Lamed Vav Amud Beis that Yosef HaTzadik, Yosef the righteous, he was tested with this. The wife of Potiphar came to him and enticed him. She tried to seduce him. She was a married woman, because this was before the giving of the Torah, and Yosef had to abide by all the laws of the children of Noah. And Yosef shekidishem shemayim b'seiser, since Yosef sanctified HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name secretly, nobody knew about it, Zohar v'hisifala eis mishmei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a letter from his name and he placed it in Yosef's name. This was Yosef's reward. Then the Gemara tells us on Lamed Vav Amud Beis, it states that that day everyone went away. It was an idolatrous holiday. So everyone went away from the house that day. So the wife of Potiphar, that was very much enchanted by Yosef. Yosef was a person of tremendous good looks, and she was very enchanted by him. So she said, now's the day when I can get him. So she dressed up for him, and he came to do his work that day, and they were alone in the house. And she grabbed onto his garment, and she tried to lure him. Yosef was a young boy, and he was far away from home, and he was in Egypt. And Egypt was a land that was shtufim mizima, that was full of immorality. And he was tempted. The Esa saw at that hour Bosa Junke Shel Oviv. He saw the image of his father Yaakov. Mirase Bechalein in the window. Omale, he said, Yosef Asidi Nochecho Sheichtuv Alav Ne'efeit. All of your brothers' names will be written, inscribed on the stones of the gown of the Kohen Godel of the high priest. Bato b'nehem, and your name also will be there. Do we want that we should remove your name from there? And instead of being known, Yosef was the shepherd. Reya Sochi, he was the shepherd. You will be known as a shepherd of prostitutes. At that time, he brought out a tremendous source of strength. He conquered his desires, and he ran away. By Yonos Achutza, he ran away. And she became so enraged with this that she called and she screamed and she said, look what this Ivri, what this Evid, what this slave came the Sachik. He came to try to molest me. And he was thrown into the dungeon. From this, states he became Reya Yisrael. Yosef was the shepherd of Yisrael from this act. And a shepherd guards all of the sheep. It was Yosef's task to guard the sanctity of Klal Yisrael. Kodesh Baruch Hu saw that since you are capable of guarding your sanctity, I will give you the task of guarding the sanctity of Klal Yisrael. And the Medrash tells us in Parshas Shmos that when Klal Yisrael came out of Egypt and they saw the sea, and the sea split by Yonos Hachutza, by Yonos, by Yar Hayom, by Yonos, that it went back. This was through the schus, through the merit of Yosef, who by Yonos Achutza, that he ran back, he ran from his mistress, from the wife of Potiphar. And what's the explanation of this? Because it states that when Klal Yisrael, when Yisrael went down to Egypt, and they were in Egypt for 210 years. And for many of those years they were enslaved and their lives were embittered. And Bilam HaRosho held that if they were, the nations of the world held, that if the Egyptians were Meishel al Nisheihem, the Egyptians were Meishel al Gufam, if they, the Egyptians enslaved their bodies, certainly they enslaved, certainly they ruled their wives also. And the Gemara tells us, the Medrash says, the Torah says, Znus achas hoyisa upirsama akosuf. There was only one act of adultery amongst many millions of Jews for hundreds of years in Egypt. Only one act, and even that was not a real act of adultery. That was a mistake. She thought it was the husband, but really it was an Egyptian. One act, and the Torah publicized it to teach us that this was the moral standard of Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara tells us in Seita and Daf Yudalef Amud Beis, v'shchus noshim hatzidkoniyos, it was through the righteous women of Egypt that Klal Yisrael was freed from Egypt. Because with their purity, they brought up such a generation. And therefore, when they came to the sea moved back. because it saw the power of Yosef. This had come from the power of Yosef with the wife of Potiphar. And this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Shifte Kor Edus Lashem, that he placed a letter of one name, a letter of his name, in every one of the sons of Yaakov, as a testimony that they are all pure. There is no Egyptian blood in them whatsoever. They are all pure, all sons from their fathers and mothers. And this is what is meant by Yaakov Avinu Mitos Shlemo, that his seed was perfect. So this concept, this halacha, means much to Klal Yisrael. That there was family purity. That there was no mixed seed in the families of Klal Yisrael, which created the purity of Yisrael that goes back to Avraham and Yitzchok and Yaakov and Sora and Rivka, Rochel and Leah and Yosef and the Shvatim. This is not something to be taken lightly. This is something that by Klal Yisrael it was guarded for generations, for centuries. On the other hand, by the nations of the world, the flood came because of this Ashkos, because of this ruination. And the Torah tells us that this was the Midah of Esav. Esav got married at 40 years old because he said, my father Yitzchok got married at 40, so I also will be righteous and get married at 40. And meanwhile, the Chazal scoffed. They said, here for 40 years he was stealing wives from beneath their husbands, and now he wants to get married at 40 to show how righteous he is. This was the quality of Esav, and this went into his seed. Edom and Rome, the European nations were deep into adultery. This was common practice by them. This was the difference between Yaakov and between Esav, between Israel and the nations. Now, unfortunately, we're living in a time of progress. Now, as far as the nations of the world is concerned, that we'll see in a minute if things have really changed. But where the great danger is, that it's seeping very strongly into the ranks of Klal Yisrael. You have today, which is commonly, which in the time of the Chazal would be considered a tremendous tragedy. Today, it's merely shook off with a phrase of an affair. It's an affair. Torah tells us, Nusachas Hoyesol Pir B'Samakosuv, amongst millions of slaves, there was only one act of adultery, and that was not even a real act of adultery. And the Torah publicized it to let us know. And here you have every day what people refer to as an affair. You have amongst the so-called liberated liberated sex, where they're not confined, they're not tied down. You have in the more affluent areas, amongst the elite, what is known as wife swapping. And then you have even amongst the enlightened professors in many of the academic seats of the world that lecture how adultery is good for marriage. On it you can build a sound and healthy marriage. These are what I am mentioning here are not isolated cases. This is today common practice in many, many circles. And heaven forbid that it should seep into Klal Yisrael. which we see the difference between Klal Yisrael and this is the same difference between the light and the dark. Let's go to one final category. And that is Yitzias Min HaSeder. What about deviations from the norm? Something that today we're witnessing. The Torah tells us in Achrei Meis, Vayikra Yud Ches, Chov Bezin, Chov Gimel, and Kedeshim Chov, Yud Gimel, Tes Vov, and Tes Zayin. Torah tells us, Ves Zohar Le Sishka Mishke Ve Isho Te Ebohi. Amongst all of the Yerayis, the forbidden sexual relationships, says that a male should not lay together with another male as if one would with a woman, as it's an abomination. Ubechol behema le sitein shchoftecho le tomavo. Person should not give his seed to an animal. Ve'isha le sabay livnei behema le rivo tevel hu. A woman should not stand before an animal for this purpose. Tevel hu, this is an abomination, this is a complete mixture. This is a complete confusion of the standards of creation in the world. This is from the very serious offenses in the Torah. It's in the category of arayis. It's punishable by death. And even the nations of the world are also commanded on this. A few things that can be said here. Is that even though in most times, well, let's say in Western culture, nations of the world did not like to think that they were involved in such degenerate acts until our generation, when we see all types of motions in legal congresses for the civil rights of homosexual communities. But even though most of the time nations, because of their pride, deny that they were involved in such things, or they try to conceal it, the Torah, to the contrary, tells us otherwise. Immediately after this parsha, the Torah tells us, Al tetamu bechol elu. Do not make yourself impure, yourselves impure with all of this, because bechol elu nitmu hagoyim. Because the nations of the world, not all of the nations, but nations of the world make themselves impure with this. Asher ani mishaleach mipneichem, and these nations I'm sending away from you. This is in Chaposeh Chov Dalet Vayikra Yud Ches. And then the Torah tells us something else. All of these acts of adultery and incest and these deviations, Eretz Yisrael cannot tolerate, the Torah says. Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz HaKadosh and it cannot tolerate. And if you will commit these acts in Eretz Yisrael, then the land will vomit you out. The land will exile you. Batokio Oretz. This is what the Torah tells us very clearly here. Now the history of homosexuality has a very vivid history in the Torah, even though the English and the European nations like to try to conceal it. When it came to the Dor HaMabul, the nation of the flood, says v'hishchish kol bosor es darkei, that flesh started to involve themselves in deviations from the normal types of sexual practices, the types that we mentioned. after the flood, when Noah planted a vineyard and he drank and he fell asleep, his son Chom and his son grandson Kenan, according to one opinion in the Gemara, were involved in an act of homosexuality with him. When the angels came to Sodom and Lot brought them in, it states all of the people of Sodom gathered to the house from young to old, and they said, "Give us your guests that we may indulge with them in acts of homosexuality." The Medrash tells us in Toldos that Esav, the father of the Roman Empire, besides being a Shefech Dam, a killer, besides being a Kefir B'Hashem, denying HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and besides stealing women from their husbands, was homosexual. Practiced regularly in acts of homosexuality. And Yaakov asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he said that a person is obligated to give honor to his older brother. How can I give honor to this older brother of mine who's a man and he lives like a woman? Therefore he decided that he'll steal the birthright, sell the birthright from him, so he should not be the older brother. When Yosef came down to Egypt and he was taken as a slave to Potiphar, not only was his wife so enticed with Yosef, but Potiphar also was enticed with Yosef. And he bought him for homosexual reasons. And only through a miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Yosef saved from this. The Roman seed, true to their father, Esav, were rampant with homosexuality. The Gemara brings us in Gittin, Perek HaNizokim, that when they conquered Yisrael, they took for captives all of the beautiful girls and all of the handsome young boys to send to Rome for acts of immorality. And there was once a shipload of them going across the sea, where to maintain the Kedusha Shisrael, the purity of Israel, they all threw themselves into the sea than rather be at the mercy of the Roman animal for these acts. And in Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezer, there are all kinds of halachos. All kinds of precautions that one has to take about leaving a child with a non-Jew, or even leaving an animal with a non-Jew. Because contrary to all of this public relations that many of these nations churn out, the Torah and the sages knew better. So this is nothing new. What does the Torah say in it? First of all, the Gemara tells us it's ein darkei bekach. It's a deviation. At least a natural sexual relationship might be prohibited in many cases, but you cannot say it's an abnormality. The Gemara says this is a deviation. Lav darkei bekach. The Gemara says in Gittin. And in Parshas Hazino, Lamed Beis Tezayin, Yakni'uhu Bezorim Do not anger me with strange acts. Do not bring my wrath up with abominations. And Rashi says, what does this refer to? Maisim tu'uvim, abominable acts, kidei mishkan zohar, for example, homosexuality, ukshofi, and sorcery. And Rabbi Feinstein in the Tshuva writes that this angers HaKadosh Baruch Hu. First of all, it's a deviation from the way he created man, regardless of what all of the sociologists want to feed us, and what the psychologists want to feed us, and what the professors want to feed us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew a little better. It's maisim zorim. They're alien acts to man. And they anger him more than the other prohibitions. Because the other prohibitions, they are forbidden. But man is overwhelmed. He's overwhelmed by his nature. But here, not only are they forbidden, but man has no nature for it. Therefore, the anger HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because this is a metziyas hara, this is an evil without a natural strive, a natural drive for it. And then we see one further degree in this. The Torah tells us in this parsha, Vayikra Yud Ches Posuk Gimel, Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Bo Leisasu, like the acts of Egypt that you dwelled in, you shall not do. Ukemase Eretz Kenan, and like the acts of the Kenanim that you're coming to, that live in Eretz Yisrael, you shall not do. Then the Torah tells us all about adultery and incest and these deviations. And the Teres Kahanim darshins, and the Rambam brings it. The Rambam brings it in Perechof Aleph of Yisuri Bia, Halocha Ches. This is an act which would be called lesbianism. Osir is forbidden. Because it's an act of Egypt. Shuzano olov. And the Torah said, Kemase eretz mitzrayim leisasu, that you shall not do the acts of Egypt. Omru chachomi. The sages say, Mahoyu esim. What were the acts of Egypt that the Torah said, we shall not do the acts of Egypt? Ish naisei ish, one man married another man. Isha naisei isha, one woman married another woman. Isha nisas lishnei anoshi, one woman married to two men. These are what is known as the acts of Egypt. And the Torah says, Maase eretz mitzrayim leisasu, that you shall not do the acts of Egypt because I am taking you out from there. Now today, we have the enlightened and the liberated. What progress are they achieving? They're returning the world to the acts of Egypt. They're returning the world to the acts of Sodom. And they're returning the world to the acts of the people before the great flood. And the rubbish that comes from the academic centers, from the greatest halls of study in the world, This is the Torah viewpoint on it, which is a little different. In summary, after going through five of the categories, let's see what we can summarize. The first principle is the Torah is called Torah because it's Heroah. From the word Heroah, to guide us and instruct us. We don't need the guidance and instruction of others. We have the guidance and instruction of the blueprint of the world. Kodesh Baruch Hu looked into the Torah and from there he created the world, which means that the norms of the world are in line with the Torah, not in the line of warped minds of each generation. And Drocheho Darchei Neyam V'chol Nesiveseho Shalom. Her ways are ways of pleasantness and ways of peace. Now, even though superficially it might look very good to be liberated, to not be restricted, superficially it might look very good, one has to be prepared for the ramifications. First of all, this liberated sex has created a churban habayis, a destruction of the home, what could perhaps be unequaled. Today there are more divorces and more marital problems and more social problems in the home than we've known for a long time. It creates a churban habonim, a destruction of children. Social and psychological and emotional problems of children, of a whole generation, is rampant because what was brought in by their parents into the home. It brings chaloim roim v'koshi. We said that it was compared to eating. Eating is good. Superficially, it's very good to eat foods that taste good. But we know that we can bring upon ourselves, heaven forbid, great sicknesses if we're not careful what we eat. Here we can bring great sicknesses, physical sicknesses, into the world from this. Rashi brings in Parshas Noach that wherever you find ashchoso, degeneration in the morals, and the luria bole elam, sickness comes to the world that kills people and kills children and kills the good and bad. And we're living today in a plagued world, in a world of sickness. With all of our modern medicine, modern equipment, tremendous resources. The fact is, this is the medical facts that the medical experts publish. That cancer has grown. Hypertension has grown. Heart disease has grown. And today, sexual diseases have reached levels of plague. An article in the paper 4 or 5 months ago in the local newspaper that 10 million women of America are suspected to be suffering from sexual venereal diseases. 10 million. There was an article in the paper tonight that in Australia there's panic because of the AIDS disease. These are some of the fine ramifications from this type of living. And then there are tremendous psychological and sexual problems come from this. If you read reports from sociologists and marriage counselors, they'll tell you that one of the most prevalent problems in marriages and cause most marriage breakups are sexual problems. Now, there seems to be a phenomenon, a generation that knows so much about sex. There's been more written and more published and more said about the subject than ever before. They should be experts. Why are there so many problems? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a person, a very sophisticated creation. And he created him with a nature. And if you go contrary to that nature, you destroy him. Man was not created with a nature. A woman was not created with a nature of free sex. They were created with a nature of loyalty, a nature of emotion, a nature of a moral standard, a nature of a conscience, a nature of modesty, a nature of busha, of shame. And when you tear it out of a person, that's major surgery, and you don't have much left after that. And you get these physical and psychological wrecks entering into marriages, and the results end up by the marriage counselors in the courts. And if they never saw any kedusha, any sanctity, they come into marriage with enormous guilt complexes. If they only saw degenerate sex, if they only saw this at the level of the animal that we mentioned at the beginning of this year, so how can they ever expect to reach a marriage of people, of men? These are some of the byproducts of what has been sold to this generation. Now, there are two motivations for this. One is, as we mentioned, money. This industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. And it works because it's an alma de shikra, this is the world of falsehood. And the Machabeh, the Beis Yosef, brings in Hilchos Shabbos that anyone who is involved in giving over to others or selling to others something that will erode his morals, you should know he's a cheta umachti asacheri. Not only is he a sinner, but he's bringing others to sin, which is from the greatest avedas. And this is the whole industry of Hollywood and New York and Paris and movies and TVs and videos and novels, that we stand in line to buy for ourselves and for our children, so others can become wealthy on it, and we are left with the poison. And then there's a second motivation for this, and that's an ideological one. That comes from the liberals and the liberated and the academics and the sociologists and the scientists and the atheists. Now, the motivation of this is liberation, to be liberated. Except they say they want to be liberated from the old morals. They want to be liberated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and from His Torah. The Chazal tell us this happened also with the Tower of Babel. When they built the Tower of Babel and they wanted to go to heaven, what was their motivation? They wanted to make war on heaven, they wanted to be liberated. The greatest crime
from this whole subject are the innocent youth. They are the victims. The others are victims by choice. The youth are never given a choice. They are brought up in such an atmosphere. They are fed by their parents thousands of hours of television, of videos, of books, which exploit this. And their well-meaning parents save and work a lifetime to send them to the campuses of mixed dormitories, promiscuity, homosexuality, and then to hear lectures from the professors why it's all right. And they are the ones who can have a good claim against the generation. The Rambam brings in Hilchos Seder, at the end of Hilchos Seder, Kol mi sheinam makpid al ishtoi val bonav ubnei beisoi. Whoever does not watch over carefully the moral standard of his wife, of his children, of his household, umazirin upoke darkehem tomid, and does not supervise them all of the time, all of the time, until he is certain that they are shalom, they are not freaks, but they are complete people in the ways of the Torah, then if they do become freaks, he is the chayter, he is the one who is responsible, as it states, v'yadato ki shalom o'alecho v'kadato nuch v'leisechto. When will there be peace in your tent, in your home, when you watch over it carefully? What must a person do? A person must make safeguards. He must fight out against all of these things. The government, especially here in South Africa, would only be too happy to introduce many reforms to these liberal folks if they had the cooperation of the public. The only public that seems to speak up is the other public. Parents must demand, especially Jews, they must demand that moral standards be upheld, that the sanctity of the human being is upheld. And a parent must safeguard his children. You can't send a child into an atmosphere which is totally contrary to the standards that we were taught and expect that it will not rub off. Let me conclude with the Rambam brings at the end of Hilchos Issuri Biyah.
Ein lechodove becholat heir kulishu kosher lereva ob lifreish elamin arayis v'abiyas asfreish. Perhaps the most difficult thing for many of the people to safeguard from is promiscuity and these acts of immorality. Omru chachomim, the sages say, b'shor shenitztavu Yisrael al arayis, when Klal Yisrael was given their code of morals, which is so much greater than that of the nations, and Har Sinai, bochu, they wept. V'kiblu mitzvizu b'tarumas. And they accepted this resentfully, because it was so difficult. V'ein atomeitzi kohol b'chol z'man u'zman she'ein ben prutzim barayis u'bias asuris. And in every generation, you will find to a degree a breakdown of set standards. Therefore, a person must be very careful and he must educate himself, he must train himself b'kiddushi yaseira, with great sanctity when it comes to moral standards. Machshova tahora, with pure thoughts, ubedeya nachona, and with a clear mind, in order to be safeguarded from this. V'yirem v'yizorem min ayichud. And above all, he should be careful never to go into seclusion with a woman that he's not permitted with, because this is the great cause for the breakdown of moral standards, like we saw at the beginning of this year. G'deile ha-chachomim ha-ya'emlim le-talmidim. Talmidehem. Even the great sages used to tell their disciples, Izaru bimimnei bit, Izaru bimnei kalosi, that you shall caution me that I should not be together with another woman, to teach them that this is something that everyone should caution himself with and not be ashamed of. And he should be careful not to become involved in frivolity, in drunkenness, in other things which bring a person to this. G'dayla mikolzu, this is all on the negative, and then the positive. G'dayla mikolzu, greater than all this, omru yifna atzmek makshavte lidivrei Torah. Let him turn his mind and his heart to Torah. If his mind and his heart will be occupied with Torah, then that is the greatest love for a Jew. And then his heart and mind will not be distracted to others. With our children, it's not enough just the negative. There must be the positive. That they must be taught. They must be taught Torah, which fills a man's heart and a man's emotions and his man's mind. Let me conclude with what Shlomo HaMelech stated in Shir HaShirim. Where he wrote, Gan Noel, Gal Noel, Mayim Chosum. He wrote on Klal Yisrael, they are a sealed garden, they are a sealed spring, they are a sealed fountain. The Medrash states, Shir HaShirim Dalin. The Medrash states, Omer Pinchas, Gan Noel, Elo Apsules. Where is the sanctity of Klal Yisrael? Where did it come from? Ganol, the sealed garden. These are the besulais, these are the virgins of Klal Yisrael that guarded themselves like a sealed garden. Galnoul, the spring that sealed, Elu Habulais. These are the married wives of Klal Yisrael that guarded themselves like a sealed spring. Mayan Chosum, a sealed fountain, Elu Azechorim, these are the males of Klal Yisrael. It was on this that the cornerstone of this Kedusha, to the sanctity of Klal Yisrael, was built. And it was through this that Klal Yisrael was able to cope with all of their great adversaries and with all of their great exiles. May we be zeche to see the continuity of the Kedushas Yisrael and the Kedushas Azivug, the sanctity of the marriage in Klal Yisrael, in spite of the environments in the world that we're living in today.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.